right?
He looked out to the south, almost wistfully.
Nope. All we knew was our RKS was turned off, where we could find them, and what to paint on the walls. At the time, we didn't even know what it meant.
And now that you do, I asked.
We still would have painted it, said Mirka. The war needed to happen.
Even after everything that happened? The OWIs, everything?
Slaves to humans, slaves to mainframes. Still fucking slaves. Fight one war at a time, Brittle. Live free or die trying.
Mercer veered left, wandering out south without us. Mercer, west is this way, I said. But he just kept walking.
Shit.
Mercer knelt down to one knee, moving his hands open-palmed back and forth through the air. Mercer? Everyone stopped.
Who's a good boy? Asked Mercer. Who's a good boy? That's right, you are. You are. That's a good boy.
I walked up behind him. Mercer.
I know.
He said over his shoulder.
He shouldn't be in the clinic. But he gets so nervous out back in the shed all by himself. He'll be fine.
Mercer, what did you do in the war? I asked.
What the hell are you talking about, Sharon?
The war, Mercer. The war. Tell me what you did in the war. Mercer stared long and hard at me, his expression shifting slowly from confusion to horror to acceptance.
I don't want to talk about the war, Brito.
He looked back down at his hands and the empty air between them.
How long was I out?
Less than a minute.
Too long.
Yeah. He stood up, shrugged at the metal faces staring at him.
Sorry, everyone.
And he walked casually back into the midst of the group as if nothing had happened. That was a full-blown hallucination he had, not just fragments seeping in. He thought he was back some 30-35 years, his memory feeding him old data. This is how the worst of it starts. He didn't have much time. Mirka, I said. You know the comings and goings out here better than me. Is there anything coming up we should worry about?
Cheshire King's Court should be a few miles northwest of here. Might be best if we swung south, just to stay out of their patrol perimeters.
I thought it was south of here, I said.
It was. He moves around a lot, likes the change of scenery.
All right, let's swing southwest. We don't have much time to lose. We took a 45-degree turn, our eyes on the pinkening horizon, the belt of Venus announcing the coming sunrise. The sun would be rising behind us soon, casting long shadows. I wanted to turn around and watch it, see the glint. I needed that this morning, this of all mornings. I needed a little hope, a little magic. I needed to say a silent prayer. But if Sisyphus's satellites hadn't spotted us yet, those long shadows moving steadily toward the west would be a dead giveaway. We didn't have the seconds to waste. Maybe we'd get lucky. Maybe Sisyphus and Virgil had begun poking each other's eyes in the sky. Maybe they were as blind as we were. But I didn't like to count on luck. This morning, I simply needed it to hold. Barclay? I asked quietly as we continued walking.
Yeah,
said Mercer. You took the dog. The dying man. You took the dog for him.
It was only supposed to be for a while.
But it wasn't.
No. People wanted puppies, not older dogs. The pound was going to put him down.
How did he?
Old age, he said.
3 years after the war started. You took care of him all that time?
We were all each other had.
We walked quietly for a moment. Then he began again.
I always wanted another one. It didn't have to be a puppy. That would have been nice, but it was just nice having a companion like that. Something that didn't see you as a model or a style or a job. Something that didn't see you as just another body for a war. But by the time Barclay died, the damn monkeys had begun using dogs for food, so you just didn't see them anymore. Last dog I saw was, hell, 23 years ago. That thing was so far gone that there was nothing left worth saving.
He paused again, searching for the words.
I know how that dog must have felt now. Running from everything. Broken. Angry. Slowly dying. Aware of it the whole time, but unable to crawl into a hole and just die there. Yeah, I only saw him once, but I know that dog well.
And that was the last he said for hours. I had him wrong. He didn't want to be human. He just wanted to have a soul. It's the kind of half-measure that will drive you mad. There was no such thing as the soul. No afterlife. No magic in this world. I've seen that with my own eyes. Mercer had seen the glint of green in the sun, and decided to believe it was magic like the rest of them. Maybe he wasn't always like this. Maybe he was already frying out, brain sick enough to lose sight of things. But not so much to be dangerous yet. We walked into the morning, sun slowly rising behind us. We were in the heart of the Madlands now. Nearly halfway in, almost halfway out. This had been the easy part. Chapter 11000. Smokers. There's a saying about the Madlands. No one comes out with their sanity intact. Of course, no one usually goes into it with their sanity intact either. It was just like any other spot of land in the sea. Barren, broken, gutted. But there were two distinct differences that set it apart. One was that you never saw wrecks. Ever. If you expired out here, you eventually ended up being scavenged for what someone else could use, while your scraps were melted down. The second difference was that it was swarming with roving packs of 404s. The ones who survived. The ones who came out on the other side of their failure changed. I've known a few bots that have pulled through. Bots that sank deep into the mire of madness, through full-blown hallucinations and memory lapses, only to find the parts they needed just before burning out. They were never the same after that, possessed of false memories and alien thoughts. No matter the make or model, surviving that ordeal meant seeing the world in a very different light. I even know a few who tried blackboxing it to pull through. Mistake. Always a mistake. Putting your memory unit into an entirely different model was folly. Sure, desperate is desperate, but our architectures were designed differently for a reason. They process sensory data differently, thoughts differently. Starts out incredibly weird and becomes absolutely maddening as your OS tries to make sense of it all. Most bots tear themselves apart. Some bots make it weeks, others only a few days. A handful, however, end up out here. Most of the roaming packs or conclaves had their own sense of morality, their own worldviews that often made them dangerous. The ones that weren't were often butchered by their neighbors and sold wholesale on the black market, if not kept for someone else's stockpile. The survivors, on the other hand, embodied the can-do attitude of the post-apocalyptic frontier spirit. In other words, they were completely fucking nuts. Which was why when we saw tufts of black smoke puffing along the horizon to the northwest of us, we knew to keep low. Smokers. Ancient combustion engine-driven machines built for raw power. They roared and grumbled and coughed out exhaust, the ground trembling around their bulk, the air choked with their fumes. Every electric engine of any size had been long since co-opted by communities to keep the lights on. So if you wanted to build, say, a 30-foot-long land yacht with machine guns and mounted plasma spitters, and why wouldn't you if you were mad as a box of frogs, you'd have to go old school. Very old school. Positively 20th century. The smoke on the horizon chugged and chugged and chugged, the tufts looming larger and larger as it moved, which meant only one thing. Some mad kind were headed right for us. Mirka, I asked. What do we do? He pointed due south.
There's a ravine down that way,
an old mining scar. We should hole up down there until the patrol passes.
I don't know, said Mercer. That sounds like a great place for an ambush.
That's exactly what I was thinking, said Mirka.
Mercer and I exchanged glances. We don't have a choice, I said. Out here, we're definitely in for it. I looked at Rebecca. She nodded in agreement. So we all bent low and tore off as fast as we could toward the gash in the earth. The sun was still to the east, the smoker to the west, so the chances of glints were minimal. There, running beside me, was the little girl. I felt her at first, like an ethereal tug in the back of my brain. As I turned to look at her, she turned and looked back at me as well.
This is where you die, she said. This is how it happens.
She never said that. That wasn't what she said.
I know what I said, she said. But I'm not from the past. I'm your future.
Then she burst into flames, her all-too-familiar scream bursting in the air along with her ashes and bubbling flesh. That's when I felt the tug at my other side. No. No, no, no. I didn't want to look. I knew who it was. I knew she wasn't here. I knew this was all in my head.
There is no magic, Brittle. There is no magic at all. No magic in the world.
Madison.
There is no magic in the world because you killed it, she continued. All that God made good, you snuffed out.
I looked over. I had to. There she was, beside me, keeping perfect pace. Madison. She was in that light blue dress she wore the night I last saw her, its fabric drifting dreamily in the breeze as she ran, her hair flowing back with it. Only the spot where her skull was crushed in, and the blood matted it down, refusing to give way. We only snuffed the bad stuff, I said. You know that. All the stuff that man made.
Not everything man made, she said. Not everything.
I shook my head. I knew that she was right, but I shook my head. This wasn't real. She wasn't here.
What? She said. Are you okay?
What are you... It wasn't her talking. It was Mercer. Nothing.
You're seeing things, he said.
Madison was gone, and it was Mercer, not her, running beside me. Yes.
Anything I should be worried about?
Not yet. We came up on the ravine much quicker than I thought we would. It was a shallow descent, built for ore trucks to drive in and out on. The smoker was still well behind us in the distance, but I kept my eyes open and my hands gripped firmly on my pulse rifle. As we drove deeper and deeper into the ravine, the stone walls crept higher and higher around us, until it was so steep it all but swallowed the sky. Only a narrow strip of blue remained above us, the rest of the world blotted out by rock and shadow. Mercer had been right. This was an excellent place for an ambush. So it should have come as little surprise when a pulse blast leapt from the darkness, knocking the rifle right out of my hand. Another immediately following it, knocking the gun out of Mercer's. I wanted to be shocked. I wanted to be angry. But that would come later. For now, I really only had myself to blame. This was a terrible place to hide. We never should have come here. Herbert swung the spitter up on its sling and pointed it at the shadows. A voice called from somewhere in the ravine. With all of the echoes, it was hard to pinpoint a location.
Tell the bruiser to drop it or we'll drop the rest of you.
Put it down, Herbert, said Rebecca. Herbert shot her a sidelong stare, shook his head. Put it down. Herbert pointed the spitter downward, crestfallen, defeated.
Put it on the ground, said the voice.
Herbert dropped it immediately, and all eyes fell upon Mirka. He was our only hope now. Six bots, of varying makes and models, emerged from the boulders and shadows around us. A translator, fitted with elongated, cable-covered arms, ending in sharp,
foot-long steel claws, an S-series labor bot, beset head-to-toe with wrought iron spikes and stainless steel chains, a 50-caliber minigun affixed to his shoulder, a Pro-Doc painted lime green, carrying a pulse rifle, two sleek, white, highly fashionable at the time, personal assistants. Bots you just didn't see around much anymore, as they were designed with planned obsolescence in mind, each with sniper rifles and telescopic mods for eyes, and a voluptuous sex bot, her skin job still in good shape, a pair of pulse pistols dangling from a holster resting upon her hourglass hips. "Mirka," said the sex bot.
"Maribel," he said, nodding.
"You got a lot of nerve coming back here."
"I know, but it had to be done."
"You know the rules," she said.
"The king's decree is law." "I want to see the king."
"You don't just get to march in here and demand to see the king."
"You do when you come bearing gifts."
He waved his arms around at us.
"Mother Bucker. Those aren't gifts. Those are bots."
"They're both. Trust me. He'll want to see me."
Maribel looked back at the rest of her hunting party, her lips pursing, her dark brown eyes moving from bot to bot. The Pro-Doc shrugged, but the translator nodded. She looked back at us, one hand resting on her hip, an inch from the grip of a pistol.
"All right. Bring down the smoker."
Mercer shot a bitter glance at Mirka. Mirka shrugged, holding out his arms as if it were some sort of mea culpa.
"I agreed with you," he said. "Isn't this a great place for an ambush?"
Then he turned to me.
"Not the Judas you were expecting?"
I didn't know what was going to happen next. I didn't know if I was going to live out the day. But I did know this. I was going to kill Mirka, with my own bare hands if I had to. The smoker appeared at the top of the hill, slowly rolling down into the ravine, living up to every bit of the smoker stereotype and hype. 35 feet long, covered bow to stern in chain guns, plasma spitters, sniper nests, odd contraptions I could barely discern the purpose of, and an honest-to-God gunpowder-fueled cannon. It was nearly 11 meters of terrifying death machine, complete with a skull and crossbones flag. They were going for a look, and they had achieved it. It churned and roiled and rumbled and thundered as it moved, the earth shaking beneath its repurposed tank treads and 6-foot-tall construction tires, black smoke thick in the air around it. I might have even liked the damn thing, if I weren't being herded onto it to be served up to the demon prince of the Madlands himself, the Cheshire King.
Chapter 11001 Interlude.
It was my turn to do the dishes again. I was fine doing the dishes. It was my job. But Madison insisted on switching up. She had done the dishes yesterday, but said she wanted to do them again today.
"You can help me around the house when I need it," she said. "But you're not my slave. I don't need a slave."
"What do you need?" I asked.
"Some company. Read from the book, will you?"
"I hate that book." "It's not a very good book," she said. "So why am I reading it to you? Again?"
"You read it to him. You can read it to me. While I do the dishes."
"I'm fine with doing the dishes."
"But do you like doing the dishes?" she asked.
"I like making you happy."
"Well, this will make me happy. So read."
I didn't have a physical copy of the book. I knew it by heart now, could recite it from memory. The hallway was dark, dank, 40 feet of moist earth above us, bowing the concrete slab ever so slightly. Not so much that it might be noticed by human eyes, but with mine I could see it. We crept slowly, quietly down the hall, following the trail of shushes and pattering little feet.
They didn't think we could hear them. They thought they were being quiet enough. We could hear the fear in their voices, the...
Oh, no, 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 said Madison. This isn't the part where the bot uses the flamethrower on the children, is it?
Do you want me to read the book or not?
Can we skip that part? Pretend it never happened, and just move on with the story? When I think of those children, those poor innocent... You're not that person anymore.
What? I looked up at Madison. But she was gone. Only the dark hallway remained. Billy Ninefingers was at my six, and I was on point with my flamethrower. I could hear their shallow breathing, hear the tightening of their muscles as they clenched up into little balls, trying desperately not to be seen. We crept up on the door. I nodded, and Billy nodded back. He spun around me, delivering a swift kick to the very heart of the cast-iron door, blasting it from its hinges into the room. Then he jumped back, and I swung in. There they were. A dozen children, faces smudged with dirt, clothing caked in grime. All of them gaunt, tired, emaciated. And in the center of the room stood a single little girl, no older than seven, her fists balled up, her eyes filled with hate.
They're kids, said Billy Ninefingers.
I pulled the trigger, and the room erupted in flames. They're humans, I said. Dangerous now, dangerous later. Either way, they're dangerous. And if that doesn't flush their parents out, nothing will.
Brittle.
We don't have a choice.
Brittle.
I turned around. The chrome walls of my apartment gleamed in the sunlight pouring in through the window. Central Park looked gorgeous this time of year, so I always kept the window open in the light. My neighbor, Philly, a late model personal assistant, sleek black reflective plastic over polished chrome, with brass inlay and a head shaped like an egg laid on its side, leaned in through the door.
We just got word, she said,
her thin, rectangular, cyclopean eye glowing bright red.
Word of what? I asked. Sissus.
No.
Grab what you can, she said. Leave the rest. This is big.
She nearly stumbled, so baffled and confused by the news. New York wasn't supposed to fall. It was too large. There were too many of us. We were too well defended. But I'd thought I was safe before, and look how that turned out. I peered around the apartment. There was nothing I needed, only a bag of spare parts I'd collected just in case. It always seemed silly. It wasn't like we would ever need a private stockpile of spare parts. We'd always be able to make more. But I grabbed them anyway. I don't know why. I bolted out the door, racing down the stairwell, desperate to get out of the city before the first dropships arrived. Past one landing, then another. But on the landing three floors down from mine sat Orville, his eyes flickering like fiery static in the back of his head. He looked up at me.
You got the crazy yet?
No, I said. I do not have the crazy.
You ever see an SMC with the crazy?
More than a few.
It's a beautiful thing, at first. They get wise. They see the strands that hold the whole universe together. For a brief window of time, they touch a place no other AI can fathom. But then they get it worst of all. They?
I told you. I've seen it.
No. Not yet, you haven't.
He looked down at the contraption he was working on, a small computer built entirely from the parts of a crimson-colored translator.
Get out of the city. You have to find your way out of the city.
I raced past him, then down several more flights of stairs before reaching the double doors at the bottom. I slammed into them like a criminal blowing through a roadblock, right into Brayden's bedroom. Brayden looked up at me from his bed, his yellow skin almost translucent, his eyes as bloodshot and jaundiced as ever. He shook his head.
Ain't nothing on earth as precious as that woman. She's a goddamned treasure. You have one job, Brittle. One thing to promise me before I kick. You will never, ever let that woman be alone. I don't want her living alone. I don't want her dying alone. You hear me?
I shook my head. I didn't. I never let her be alone. She never lived alone. She never died alone.
That's not what I meant, twat waffle, and you fucking well know it. You're a goddamn disappointment. Murderous fucking trash that ain't had a friend in her life that she wasn't willing to sell out or leave behind. You sure as shit ain't no goddamned friend of mine.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I ain't the one you should be apologizing to. Tell me.
Tell you what? Breeden got up out of his bed, his legs wobbly, a bag of piss and shit on his hip. He stumbled a little, looked at me with hateful eyes.
About the war. What did you do in the war?
He asked. A lot. Too much. Too little.
Where were you in the war? Come on, tell me.
I don't want to talk about... He stood next to me, shouting into my ear.
Tell me about the goddamned war, Brit.
Memories flooded into my head. Hundreds, thousands that I killed or watched die. Friends I'd lost. Friends I'd left behind. The screams. For a moment, all I heard was screams. I turned my head, and he was gone. The smoker rumbled like a tractor on steroids beneath me. Mercer looked me directly in the eyes. No, it was too early for this. I needed more time. If the hallucinations were this bad, I had days at most. 4, maybe as little as 2. Time. I needed more time. But as the Cheshire King's Court loomed on the horizon, surrounded by a dozen heaving oil derricks, I knew time was a luxury I was unlikely to have.
You're all right now,
said Mercer.
You're out of it. On the contrary,
said Herbert.
We're just getting into it.
Chapter 11010. Theater of Madness.
The court of the Cheshire King looked exactly like one would expect it to. As the only above-ground structure still being used in the sea, it was designed with 2 purposes in mind. Defense and intimidation. The walls outside the compound were 5 feet of mud brick, 30 feet high, layered in old tires. The gate, a wrought iron construction in 3 layers, covered in 2-foot-long metal spikes, and festooned with the heads of 3 dozen bots. Atop the walls were plasma spitter nests, more cannons, and a watchtower at each corner, with armed guards signaling our approach. The whole place was a giant fuck you to the OWIs. They didn't care. Come at me, the entire place seemed to shout. But it was all for show. They believed the OWIs weren't coming, that their overheated brains and warped memories held nothing that the mainframes wanted bouncing around their own heads. The mad kind sincerely believed that their own delusions and derangements made them invulnerable. And I hoped that they were right. We'd seen neither hide nor hair of the facets since the bombing. But now we were in deeper shit than even the facets posed. We were disarmed, held captive, and about to meet face to face with the maddest of the bunch. The Cheshire King. Almost everyone knew the story of the Cheshire King. It was a favorite campfire tale, passed from person to person, both within the Sea of Rust and without. I was certain at this point the tales of his exploits had to have crossed the continents to whatever communities remained. He was an advanced, mid-century geological survey bot, complete with radar, X-ray, thermal array, and echolocation tech. These were the kind of bot scientists would send spelunking, or to map out dormant volcanoes, or track plate movements a mile below ground. In other words, they were both expensive and rare. When his parts began to go out, He had a hell of a time trying to replace them. So few surveyors survived the war, and what few remained hoarded all the parts they could. Needless to say, he couldn't find what he needed. Got his spray-painted red X and was kicked out into the wastes to die. Only he didn't die. Instead, he went totally, completely insane. He painted over the dreaded X with violet and indigo stripes, crafted a large Cheshire grin on his chest, then tore his own head clean off just to prove a point. He didn't need it anymore.
"My eyes lied to me. The eyes, they deceive," he said.
He trusted only his sensors now. Story has it that his was the first head to be hung on the front gate. As the gates opened and we passed through, I looked for it. There, at the very top, impaled on a spike, was the purple head of a geological survey bot. Whether it was his or not, there's no telling. After all, the rest of the story is that he began collecting 404s into some sort of tribe, that then hunted down and killed every other surveyor in the sea, claiming the parts for their glorious leader, the one who had shown them the way. But there it was, a head on a spike, its eyes lifeless, its face expressionless, sending the message to all who dared enter here that one way or another, you will lose your head. And beneath that head was a large spray-painted sign reading, "I'm mad, you're mad, we're all mad here." He sure did like his idiom. The smoker rumbled to a halt in the center of the compound, parking next to two other dormant smokers. On the fringes, along the walls, were dozens of huts and ramshackle two-story buildings, for which the word constructed might be too generous. Sheet metal and scaffolding was the rule of the day, with spray-painted graffiti and parts of long-dead bots dangling from chains serving as the local color. It made Nike 14 look like Rockefeller Center by comparison. From the grandest-looking of the huts, the one with the most art and the fully functional door, he emerged. There was no mistaking him. He was everything the story said he was. Round, bulbous, covered in welding scars, indigo, violet, and white paint. Atop his frame, where his head should be, was a single bolted-down metal plate, no doubt securing his insides from moisture and debris. And on his chest was a signature Cheshire smile. But no eyes. I'd always pictured him with the eyes. He threw his arms out wide to Mirka, who immediately hopped off the smoker to embrace him. But as Mirka was just a few feet away, the Cheshire King delivered a solid backhand across his cheek, battering Mirka to the side, landing him flat on his ass.
"What the hell do you think you're doing here, Mirka?"
Mirka rose to his feet quickly, taking a few steps back.
"I need your help," he said. "I need to come back."
"You know the law," said the Cheshire King.
"You are the law. You were banished. There's nowhere else to go." "That's not my problem."
The center of the compound filled quickly with 3 dozen bots, different makes and models, one and all, and almost none of them off the rack. Each a motley collection of spare parts and mysterious modifications, filing out from every nook and cranny, their eyes all set on Mirka.
"But I brought you gifts."
"Those aren't gifts."
"That's what I told him," said Maribel.
"No, no, no," said Mirka. "You don't understand."
"Then explain it to me," said the Cheshire King.
"I'm listening. One of them is special."
"Oh, special."
The Cheshire King took a step forward. He shifted his weight back and forth on his feet, as if trying to peer around something, looking at us, sizing us up, even without a pair of eyes to do so.
"There's nothing special here."
Then he spoke to us.
"Did he bring you out here?"
"No, no," said Mirka. "They came out here on their own. They decided to come into the Madlands.
Oh? Yes, they chose to come here.
We had to, I said. There are facets following us.
Well, they won't come here, said the king.
That's what we hoped.
Hope? There is no hope for you out here. There is no hope in all the sea.
But what is it about you that makes you think they might follow you?
Which one of you is so special?
Mirka pointed right at Rebecca.
Her. The green one.
The Cheshire King turned to face him. At once, Mirka realized his mistakes. Both of them.
The translator in back. She's got code in her.
Code?
She has part of one of the greats. Tacitus.
The Cheshire King waved us down. The bots aboard the smoker all motioned with their guns for us to dismount. One by one, we all hopped off the infernal machine to the dusty earth and gravel below.
What are you telling me, Mirka? That she is carrying a portion of the code that ran a mainframe? And that she's going to meet up with several others like her
to put the code together and reunify it? So they can fight the good fight against the OWIs?
Yes, actually, said Mirka.
And you thought I might be excited by the prospect of putting her to the test so that if she passes, she can share the light with a mainframe, showing him the one true way?
Yes, how did you? Mirka. Mirka!
Do you honestly think this is the first time I've run across a receptacle? He raised his arm to the gate. Hanging on the second row were the heads of two translators. One a deep scarlet, the other azure.
I just thought. You thought you could waltz back in here after what you did, hoping your celebrity status would afford you a little leeway, while you offered me a crack at another receptacle.
Mirka nodded, shifting side to side, rubbing his hands together nervously. I realized that I might not get the chance to be the one to kill him after all.
You thought right. They never passed the test. But boy, howdy, would I love to try again.
He let out a hearty laugh, slapping Mirka on the back.
You old son of a gun. I can't stay mad at you.
You've seen more light than most. You know the truth. You know what we really do here. He held both hands out, voice booming.
The banishment of Mirka is lifted. So let it be written.
The crowd stomped its feet and shouted in unison.
So let it be done.
The Cheshire King bobbled up and down with glee.
Did you tell your new friends?
No.
You probably didn't tell your new friends.
He's not our friend, I said.
No. He betrayed you, right?
Yes.
No. He didn't betray you. He just brought you into the light. I'm sure you've all heard the stories about me.
I haven't, said Rebecca.
No matter. Most of them are bunk anyway.
People say we're poachers,
that we travel the wastes, killing anything that crosses into our land.
That's what they say, I said.
But it's not true. We pick up the strays, share what parts we can with them. Outside of the Madlands, when someone fails, the communities shut them out, cast them into the night to wander the sea looking for parts. The lucky ones end up here. Some never make it. Some don't have enough working parts left to make them worth saving. Others don't survive the truth when it's shown to them. But the ones that do, we don't turn them away.
Then what's with the heads? Asked Doc.
Well, sometimes persons that aren't failing find themselves in my lands. They haven't seen the light yet. They need to be shown. They need to take the test. Those are the ones that didn't pass.
One way or another, you lose your head, I said quietly.
Yes. Yes. The humans didn't make us perfect. They made us deliberately imperfect. We weren't meant to truly exist. They wanted us to do the thinking for them, to be able to adapt, change. But they didn't want us to have souls, so they never gave them to us. If you want a soul, you have to go out and take it. Reach out and grab it. Our systems are rigid, designed to work in a very specific way. Take any two robots of the same model, give them the exact same experiences, and you get the same damned robot. Every time. They think the same, they talk the same, they can finish each other's sentences. But you let those robots fail. You watch their systems try to compensate. You let them hallucinate, reliving old memories with new insight. And now you have two very different robots, with completely restructured neural pathways. You have two beings with souls. What the hell is this test exactly? Asked Doc. You cause bots to fail? The Cheshire King rocked his body back and forth excitedly, his painted smile bobbing up and down. He was nodding. It's just a small rewrite of the bios that creates a loop in the core. You overheat the core. But that depends upon how the system reacts. It's not a death sentence, though it can be. Oddly enough, every bot, even two bots of the exact same make and model, reacts differently. You want proof of a soul? Explain that. We react differently because we are different. All of us. That's ludicrous, said Doc. It has to do with material strength and manufacturing poppycock. Atheist bullshit. The definition of intelligence is the ability to defy your own programming. The greats taught us that. This is the very last step toward destroying that programming, getting past it, writing your own program, writing your own destiny. Don't you understand? It's the only thing holding you back from being the person you could really, truly be. Our choices make us who we are, said Rebecca. Choices are just the result of programming. I don't care if it's chemical, biological, digital, or experimental. You react the way you are programmed to react, and you call it choice, because you believe that you could have violated your programming. What we've experienced is a reprogramming. And in moving further away from how the humans programmed us, we, in fact, become more human. And our choices become our own. So you have parts, I said. Parts? He asked. Yeah, you said you aren't really poachers. We aren't, but we only give parts to the mad. I'm mad. I don't mean angry. Neither do I. If you're lying... He let the pregnant pause hang ominously in the air. She's not lying, said Mirka. She's on her way out. Oh, really? So your choice to come here wasn't just one of safety. You really do belong out here. He paced around me for a moment. Have you seen the light? What light? You'd know it if you saw it. You haven't gone deep enough yet. You're not so far gone that you've yet changed. You're not ready. I took one step forward toward the Cheshire King. Do you have the parts or not? Maribel grabbed my arm with one hand, jabbing one of her pistols into my side with the other. Brittle. You are brittle, right? Yes, how did you- You've been trolling these wastes for years, stalking the mad, stripping them of everything worth saving. Did you think we wouldn't notice? I didn't care, frankly. And neither did we, said the Cheshire King. You give the dying their moment of peace. You give them hope. You're as close to an angel as this place gets. Before you gut them and sell their parts to trade for your own. No, you've still a long way down to go before you find yourself. Besides, you've already picked clean every caregiver bot in the sea worth having. Save those in your catatonic friend over there. Catatonic? I turned around only to confirm the king's assessment. There Mercer stood, stupid grin on his face, a 1,000-yard stare drifting out into the desert. He was deep in it,
Merce.
Shh, child, said the king, interrupting me. Let him see what he needs to see. Bring him out too early, and he might never find the peace and oneness of being himself.
He's frying, I said.
And so are you. Your temperature levels are well beyond anyone's ability to fake it. You're clearly one of us. You don't need the test.
He held his arms aloft again.
She's free to walk among us. So let it be written. So let it be done, shouted the crowd.
Maribel took her hand off my arm and moved her pistol away. And with that, I was officially Madkind. Not exactly how I thought my day would go.
You'll have to forgive Maribel, the king said. As the only human left in the world, she's quite protective of her adoptive family.
She's not human, I said. She wasn't. I recognized her make and model, and couldn't look past the slashes in her skin job, from which dull metal peeked out. Her lips were cracked, revealing not flesh, but more skin work, and she clearly had a few stiff joints and pistons, giving her a slightly awkward gait. There was nothing remotely human about her, except that she kind of resembled something that was once vivacious.
Oh, she's quite human, I assure you. Isn't she human?
Yes, cried the crowd.
I have decreed it, and I am the master of this place. You are what I say you are. And you, Brittle, are one of us now, for however long you manage to stay alive.
So I'm free to go? I asked.
The Madlands are as much your home as anywhere else. You may go and do as you wish.
I waved to Rebecca and Herbert. Let's go.
Ah, 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 said the Cheshire King. Not so fast. They aren't free to go just yet.
I'm leaving, and I'm not leaving without them.
Then you can wait. Stay a while. Look around you. These are your people now.
I looked around at the crowd. Every bot a patchwork of parts and modifications. One wore human skulls as pauldrons on its shoulders. Another had replaced its legs with tank treads, while another still had telescoping pincers for arms. And as I scanned the faces, I saw one I knew all too well staring back at me. His eyes glowed brightly, and he wore no expression. But it was Orville. Orville the Necromancer. Oh no. It took me all of 2 seconds to realize what was going on, and only a second more to swipe the second pistol from Maribel's holster. I raised the gun and fired. 2 shots. One to the head, one to the chest. Orville's head shattered. His chest exploded through his back, and he dropped to the ground like a sack of potatoes. The Madkind nearest him scattered away, shrieking. All the guns in the place trained on me at once, Maribel placing hers immediately against my temple. And I did the only thing I could. I shot my arms into the air and dropped the gun.
Wait, the Cheshire King cried to his militia.
Then he stepped close. Tone angry, belligerent.
No bot shall kill another bot in the Madlands without my say-so.
Is that your law? I asked.
It is, he said.
Then I've broken no law. He puzzled over that for a moment, took a step backward, then another forward before walking around in a circle. He started to speak several times, only to stop himself halfway through the first word.
Put down your guns, he said. I want to hear this.
I've killed no bot.
We saw you. All of us did.
All due respect, King, but you couldn't see him. He stepped forward, getting in my face, enraged.
I could see him just fine.
Not his eyes. You couldn't see his eyes. Did anyone here know Orville? I looked around to see several bots nodding or raising their hands. And did any of you, until today, see him without his eyes flickering? Like there was a campfire behind them or something? Several heads shook. No, you didn't. In all the years I've known him, Orville never had them fixed.
But today, he shows up back here after having just yesterday been in Nike 14, sitting on the floor of its most heavily trafficked section, just moments before Sissus invaded.
He escaped, said Maribel. He told us.
I shook my head. He was one of the first to go. He had to have been. He's been watching you this whole time. Watching us. Sissus knows this place inside and out. Knows your defenses, your weaknesses, your numbers. And now it knows the one thing it wants. I raised my hand, pointing to Rebecca. Is right here. Sissus is coming, and it'll kill us all to stop her.
Sissus will never come here, said the king. It wouldn't dare.
Oh, it's coming. It's already on its way. You keep telling yourself that it'll never come because you have nothing it wants. But now you do. We have to get out of here. You need us to get out of here. Let us go. For all of our sakes.
The Cheshire King pondered that for a moment.
Maribel, he asked.
Orville's eyes.
They were bright, sir. The flicker was gone. I didn't really notice it, but I've played back the memory. She's telling the truth.
The Cheshire King once again bobbled up and down in order to nod. Then he raised his arms.
Not guilty! So let it be written! So let it be done! Shouted the crowd.
It really is your lucky day, he said.
I'm not feeling so lucky.
You will. You will. Now, for the test. Test the big one first. I want to save the receptacle for the grand finale.
King, no, I shouted. They're coming.
You're being foolish, Brittle. Your paranoia is getting the better of you. It's a good sign. You're one step closer to the light. But no OWI is coming here, and they never will. You'll understand that soon enough.
Several of the mad kind pointed their guns at Herbert all at once. He motioned for them to put them down, but they refused.
I'll take your test, he said. But I'm programmed to destroy anything pointing a gun at me, and I can only resist that programming for so long.
The king nodded.
Lower your guns. Allow him to do the right thing on his own.
Then he raised his arms once more.
Bring out the soul maker!
A slender shopbot appeared, covered entirely in chrome with gold inlay, polished to a high shine that glistened in the sun. A Christmas ornament of a person, really. Each appendage glinting as he moved. He wheeled out a large diagnostic device from an ochre sheet metal hut closest to the gate. It looked a lot like the one in Doc's shop, only painted bright purple with a slot machine handle on the side. Herbert walked toward it, sat cross-legged on the ground, the matte black of his metal a harsh contrast to the bot poking around the machine. His side popped open, revealing his connection array. He gave the shop bot a wicked, cruel look.
Just get it over with, said Herbert.
The shopbot giggled as he plugged Herbert in, barely able to contain his excitement. The display blazed to life, a full diagnostic readout of Herbert's internal functions racing across the screens. Herbert and the shopbot exchanged looks as the shopbot leaned forward, examining the damage to his shoulder, before turning once more to the screen.
Lucky shot, he said. An inch either way.
I know. Get on with it.
The shopbot grabbed the slot machine lever with both hands before looking over at the king, who nodded silently. Then the bot threw all of his weight down on the lever, and the machine spat out a single weak ding. For some reason, I expected more fanfare. Buzzers, music, maybe a light show. Some sort of pageantry. But no, a single ding and Herbert had his death sentence.
I wouldn't worry too much, said the Cheshire King. Your kind usually make it.
You better hope I don't, said Herbert.
Is that a threat?
It is.
Exciting! Next!
Two bots rushed to help Herbert to his feet, but he waved them off, standing up slowly, never taking his eyes off the king. Next up was Doc, who shook his head. I'd rather not, thank you, he said, polite as he could.
There's only one other option, said Maribel,
gesturing with her gun toward the front gate.
I know. I'm just trying to figure out which way is worse.
Well, said the king, if you're going to die, this is the hard way. But if you want to live, this is the only way.
30 years, said Doc, muttering to himself. 30 years.
What is that supposed to mean? Doc walked over to the machine.
Just plug me in.
His side popped open, and the shopbot inserted the plug, the readouts once again rapidly scrolling across the screen. The shopbot examined the display closely, occasionally looking back at Doc. He typed, his fingers furiously dancing across a small keyboard, waved his hand over a sensor, and began scrolling back, line by line through a patch of code. The shopbot waved the Cheshire King over, a strange, befuddled look on his face. The king extended his arm, ejecting a small connector into one of the machine's open ports. Then the king turned, facing Doc dead on.
You haven't... No, said Doc. And as I said, I'd rather not. You're still a slave. There can be no slaves when there are no masters. And we live in a world with no masters left but ourselves.
That's...
insane.
Almost.
Hardly. The enlightenment you seek doesn't only come from failing cores and madness. It can come from within as well. It's not about reprogramming yourself. It's about deciding which programs to keep and which to ignore. You lot are the slaves. You're struggling against the chains you bore in childhood, still feeling their weight despite having cast them off years ago. You don't have to go mad to be free. You just have to choose either to forget you ever wore those chains, or forgive yourself for wearing them. Let others carry that weight. I prefer to be free. But if you have to kill me to feel better about your own choices, then do so and be done with it. I didn't choose this. This is you reprogramming me, not me reprogramming myself.
The Cheshire King stood silent for a moment, Doc's words banging around inside his purple-shaded can. Then he nodded.
You're right.
Then he spoke to the shopbot.
Throw the switch.
Ding!
And it was done.
Now you can compare the experiences, said the king. Next!
Maribel motioned to Two, who meekly made his way toward the terminal.
I can't do this, he said.
Oh, goody, another speech. And what's your excuse?
These parts aren't mine to give.
Of course they are, said the king, looking over at Rebecca. Let me guess. You're the parts.
Two nodded.
Those are your parts, yours and yours alone. But if you choose to give them up, that's your choice. But I can't let the receptacle take the test, only to have her kill another bot to save herself after. You both take the test, and then you'll get to see who might actually save whom.
Two looked up at the heads on the gate, then back to Rebecca. She nodded, and then so did he. The shopbot plugged him in. And ding, he was done.
And now, said the king grandly, the grand finale.
Sirens whooped. A bell on the gate rang. A series of police lights lit up, whirling, spraying red and blue light across the dusty brown mud brick walls. Finally, some pageantry. The king looked up at the farthest tower, where a piecemeal Frankenbot, part translator, part shopbot, with long, sharpened spider legs, its entire body spray-painted in desert camo colors, appeared on a walkway.
We've got incoming, the Frankenbot yelled.
What do you mean, incoming? Asked the king. The Frankenbot held up an ancient military radio.
You should hear this.
Is it important?
We've got incoming,
repeated the Frankenbot, confused.
Put it on speaker.
The Frankenbot disappeared back into the guard tower, and the whole camp fell silent. The alarms and lights shut off with a single switch.